Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
I couldn't resist going to that clip with the election cycle having started, ironically, what is it, a year and a half in advance? That's just crazy. Anybody think it's just like too early? Anyone? Anybody like fearing the wave of bad political ads coming? You know, that's, oh my gosh. Back when I worked in advertising, we loved election season because we all made our quotas easy throughout election season. And now that I'm no longer in the advertising business, I like back to like everybody else, I dread it because of all of the mudslinging ads that are going to come. Authenticity in politics. Is that even possible to be authentic in politics anyway? I think the clear answer is pretty much no, and that's because we kind of get to the point where we only want to elect somebody who's perfect, right? I mean, that's pretty much our general consensus. As soon as we find out somebody's not perfect, they're out of the running, right? So really, the presidential election is all about who can maintain the facade the longest to get your vote in November, and then all of the real stuff will come out afterwards, but then it really doesn't matter because they're already elected. Isn't that pretty much how the cycle goes? And what I think is kind of interesting, and now here's the thing. I don't preach politics from the stage. I think you probably have all figured that out. Y'all don't even know if I'm Republican or Democrat. Y'all have ideas, but I always wonder where they come from because I never come out on either side for either party. I think both people need Jesus. That's where I come out on it. I think that Jesus is the real answer for this country, not the Republican agenda or the Democratic agenda. And you can Christianize either agenda. Yes, you can. You can Christianize either agenda or you can demonize either agenda. It really doesn't matter. It depends on where you come from. So I have no political, you know, bone in this race or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what the right phrase is. Anyways, I don't really care about it. However, one thing I find interesting, and now I don't know the guy's politics either. I just find it interesting that Trump is leading the race right now on the Republican side. Anybody like see that? And it's almost like, how is this happening? I mean, it's just, I thought it's kind of ironic. But I think the reason why is because he's the only politician up there who really doesn't care what anybody thinks of him, right? He'll say whatever. He doesn't care. I mean, after all, he's like, what, the 133rd richest man in the world? It's like he doesn't need politics to be successful. He already has been, and so he'll come out and say whatever he wants. Doesn't matter who he offends, because he's kind of used to saying whatever he wants without caring about who he offends. And I don't know how long it's going to go for. But I think what people have liked about him is simply the fact that he's being honest. To some extent, I guess. I don't know. I didn't watch all the debates. I watched the beginning and just kind of flipped back over for part of it. The very fact that he answered that first question, when they said, who's unwilling to support the Republican Party if you don't get the nominee? And he's like, I mean, he just seemed like that high school rebel kind of moment, like me. It was just, you liked it in a sense. And there was another part of it that I also saw, which really hit a chord with me, because I pastored a mainly blue-collar church in South Florida. And there was a question that he was asked about bankruptcy. Now, if you don't know his background on him, you don't know what this question is all about. This question was a very personal question for me because it's kind of one of my biggest issues with him. It's because I pastored blue-collar church in South Florida, which most of the guys in there were installers of, you know, plumbing, electrical, that kind of stuff. And when Trump built a really nice golf course about 3 miles from our church building, tons of guys in my church were employed there. And you know, everybody's getting work there and loving it because, of course, you know, if you're working for Trump, of course, you're going to get paid. The guy's got billions of dollars, right? No. That's not how he does business. He sets up this corporation to build the thing. And then as soon as it's built, he can declare bankruptcy, have one of his other corporations buy it at pennies on the dollar. And guess who gets left out in the cold? The blue collar workers that were in my church. And so when he was asked that question about bankruptcy, my ears perked up. I was like, yeah, that's my issue with you. That's why I won't vote for you, is because of the fact that I know how you've messed these guys over. I don't like him anymore after his answer, but I like the fact that he sort of owned it. And what he said was, what I did was legal. True. He's almost like basically saying, listen, it was a dirty thing to do. I fully admit it, but it was a legal thing to do. And there was something about the answer, I at least liked the fact that he didn't snake out of it and try to make himself look good in the midst of it. That's the only thing I liked about it. I just liked the fact that he owned the fact that he was a snake when it came to business, and he at least owned it. And there was something about that authenticity that I felt like at least with him, you're getting some semblance of authenticity, which I think is why he's getting so much support on the Republican side. Whereas everybody else up there, they're saying all of the right things, but in the back of your mind, you know they're lying through their teeth, right? And there's just something refreshing about it. And I think that's what was so endearing about Jesus to the masses, is because they saw him as a voice of authenticity. They saw him as just, he shot straight. He wasn't trying to win people's vote. And he talked a lot about being authentic. He talked a lot about the opposite of authenticity, which is hypocrisy. And one of my favorite lines as I was studying this a little more in depth recently was, in chapter 12, he really hits hypocrisy on the head, and he's sort of starting to talk about it in chapter 11 of the book of Luke. And just to show that he's not really trying to win friends and influence people, he's just shooting it like he sees it, so to speak. He's talking about the Pharisees and how hypocritical they are. And of course, if you're going to talk about somebody else's hypocrisy, you got to be living in a pretty clean house if you're going to be throwing rocks, right? If you're going to live in a glass house, you're going to throw rocks. You got to be careful. He wasn't living in a glass house. It was easy to... I don't know how the analogy works for him, because you could throw all the rocks you wanted at him, and he was without sin, cast the first stone, so to speak, with him. So he could legitimately call out hypocrisy without anybody having anything to throw at him. So he's calling out the Pharisees for how hypocritical they are. And there's this hilarious dialogue that happens. I hope you can see the humor. Like, sometimes I wonder, do I just see the humor because I'm like a Bible nerd, or can everybody else see the humor too? I don't know, but I just feel like a computer geek laughing about code when I read some of these things. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'll get with it. Okay, moving on. So he says, "Woe to you Pharisees, because the most important seats in the synagogues are the ones you want to sit in, and you're just all about that kind of stuff. Woe to you, because you're like unmarked graves that people just walk over without knowing. And one of the experts in the law..." Okay, now the experts in the law, they weren't Pharisees, but they were sort of in that same category because they were those who studied the law. So one of the experts in the law, who wasn't a Pharisee, pipes up and he goes, "Teacher, when you say those things about the Pharisees, I feel insulted also." Like, in other words, I'm not a Pharisee, but I feel kind of insulted that you're calling out my friends. Classic Jesus. He goes, "Oh, well, yeah. Well, as for you experts in the law, woe to you, because you people load up people with burdens," and he goes right into them. And it's almost like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Were you afraid that you were somehow being lumped in with that category wrongly? No. I meant to lump you into that category." It just shows that he doesn't care about trying to win their vote. He's not going to try to say what they want to hear just to get them to like him. He's just going to be who he is. He's going to say what needs to be said, you know, and just let it out there. I love that about him. And I think there are people who look at that and said, you know, he's calling it like he sees it. And there's something about us that sort of instinctively gravitates towards somebody, even if you don't like what they have to say. You can at least respect the fact that they're honest and they're open about who they are. And that's, I think, one of those it factors about Jesus, is that he was who he said he was, but he also just called it like he sees it. Is that right word? Sees it? Sees it? Well, it's easy to say, "I call it like I see it." How do you say it when somebody else does it? "They call it like they see it." Yeah. That doesn't sound right. "They call it like they saw it." You see the dilemmas I run through here. Y'all want to judge me, but you don't have any better options. All right. Moving on. You know, with Jesus, though, you know, it's funny. In my notes, I wrote, "He called it like he saw it." But it just doesn't sound right. Moving on. But they could see him being who he was. You know, he taught about loving people, and he loved people. He taught about forgiveness, and he forgave people. He taught about being generous, and he was generous. I mean, he was everything that he taught, and he lived it out. And I think people saw the genuosity? Not generosity, the genuous? See, y'all don't know this either. Okay, all right. Y'all saw that he was authentic in the way that he presented himself. Or that's the way people could see that he was authentic in the way he presented himself. And they gravitated towards it. It was just one of those it factors about him. The reason why people who were nothing like him loved to be around him is because they just liked this stuff about him. We've been talking about these it factors of Jesus, about how he saw the people around him as people who were entrusted to him. And so you begin to view people differently when you see yourselves as being entrusted in that sense. He looked at the little things, and he realized the little things make a big difference. He was a thermostat and not a thermometer in the rooms he was in. He showed people honor. He didn't wait for people to respect him before he showed them respect, but rather he treated others as he wanted to be treated. He just led the way in all these things. He led the way in generosity. And Pastor Bobby did a great job talking about that last week. And I've been giving him a hard hard time because he called me up and he says, here's what I want to do. I don't know if I want to call him out on this. Bottom line, he was using some of my money to be generous last week, which is what I thought was hilarious. I'm like, let me get this straight. You want to use my money to be generous? Really? And I'm thinking in the back of my mind, next week I'm preaching authenticity. You just gave me my illustration. You can have that illustration. Go for it. So anyways, I don't know where Pastor Bobby is. I love him to death. I got to tell you, he sells himself so short. He's up here talking about how he's not generous. Y'all know that's a lie. Because the man is more generous than any of my other friends. He's been incredibly, a blessing to me and my family over the years. Anytime I have a need, he's always there for it. So I don't think he realizes his own generosity, but that's for that. Anyways, back to Jesus though. Jesus just embodied all of these little sort of things. And it was all these little things that were just sort of the it fact that made people love to be around him. And our hope as a church is that we would so embody the person of Christ that there would be that sort of it factor about us as a church that when we come together, we truly would be a real authentic representation of who Jesus was, not just in what he taught, but in the kind of person that he was. And one of these things was just the fact that he was so authentic. And he was so authentic that he could get up and call out hypocrites. And in Matthew 23, he goes into great length on this. In Matthew 23, by the way, he calls out hypocrites a lot. And so what I want you to get out of this is that God has an issue with hypocrisy. People always say, the thing I don't love about the church is that the church has too many hypocrites. Well, here's the deal. God has that same knock on the church. He's just as frustrated, probably more so than anybody else is. And so in Matthew 23, the whole chapter, all he's doing is calling out hypocrites. And he starts off and he says, listen, the teachers of the law who sit in Moses' seat, be careful to do everything they tell you. Just don't do what they tell you to, or just don't do what they do. In other words, they're teaching the right thing. They're just not living it out. And people can see when you're teaching the right thing but not living it out, because you become Christ for people outside of these walls. And you may talk a good game about what you're learning in church, but unless you're living it out, they'll have an issue with it. And the thing about Jesus, he just lived it out. He always lived it out. And he was calling out those who weren't living it out. And the reason why there was such a drastic contrast is that Jesus would say, listen, they're teaching the right things, they're not living it out. But what did he always say to his followers? Follow me. Follow me. Think how daunting of a thing it would be to look to other people and say, just do what I do. The Apostle Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 11, imitate me just as I'm imitating Christ. Other translations say, follow me just as I am following Christ. Anybody here this morning ready just to look to your peers and say, hey, just follow me, do what I'm doing in my marriage because I'm doing the thing that Christ would do in a marriage. Just do what I'm doing in parenting because I'm doing the kind of thing Christ would do in parenting. Just do what I'm doing here at work because I'm doing the kind of thing Christ would do here at work. That's an intimidating standard, isn't it? Like one we would kind of shy away from. I'm almost terrified to say it, but what endeared people to Christ is the fact that he was living out what it is that he said to do. In our day and time, though, we have a hard time with saying, follow me, because we know we're not living the part. We live in a day and an age that sort of pushes people towards towards being a hypocrite, all right? So I don't know the right word. I don't know how to say this, and I don't care. This is a message on authenticity, so I'm authentically showing you I'm horrible with grammar, but I'm also finding out so are y'all because you don't have any good suggestions either. So he had an issue with hypocrisy, and our day and time pushes us towards hypocrisy. It's almost become a value that we promote as much as we possibly can, and social media is not the cause of it, it's just the latest extension of it. I mean, think about the images that are portrayed through social media and how false they really are compared to reality. I mean, you can be seen by everybody in the social media world as a fitness guru, even though you don't work out, right? All you got to do is just post a few motivational thoughts, post a few things about some vitamin supplements, post a few selfies of you at the gym whenever you do happen to go, and then make sure you get the right angle on the photo so you look a little bit slimmer and trimmer. If you get like this angle, it makes your shoulders look bigger, your waist look smaller because of the way that the lens does it. Anybody know this little trick? If you're in dating websites, you know this little trick. See, I used to be there, and never trust a down angle picture is what my friends told me. They were right. I'm just saying. Gosh, I don't know if I should share this next one. This next one is not somebody from the church, but I had a friend of mine who saw a girl on my Facebook page back when I was single. He says, why don't you date her? She looks pretty hot. I said, that's just because you haven't seen her in real person. She's not quite the image you see on there. I'm sorry. Maybe that's wrong. That's wrong. This is me just being as shallow as I truly am. So But we love using the Photoshop and the Instagram filters and the cream cam. If you don't know what cream cam is, it's this great little free program that will like wash away all your wrinkles, blemishes, anything in your skin you don't want people to see. And you just kind of hit a little button, you adjust it. How many of y'all know cream cam? Yeah, some cream cam. So you get all these things, and we live in a world where everybody else that we see has been filtered. Whether it's their images we're seeing that are filtered that are on Facebook or on Instagram, or if it's the image they project when we're around them that has all been filtered. And when we live in a world where everything we see is filtered, everything we see is the me I want you to see, we begin to start to think that I'm the only one with problems. And people aren't going to love me or accept me if they knew my problems, because I'm the only one who's got problems. And that's why we love Jerry Springer. It's the one place we can go to find somebody who's got more problems than us, right? That's why we go to it, because everywhere else we're looking, whether it be in church or on social media in the world, it's all this filtered image. And Jesus says, you know, these filtered images are a problem, a real problem. So much so that you have to understand how big of a problem this is to understand two of the craziest passages in Scripture. One of them is in Joshua 7, and one of them is in Acts chapter 5. The setting on both of them is a parallel. In Joshua chapter 7, what you have is Moses has led the people out of Egypt. Joshua is leading them out of the promised land. And these people who were once slaves, who were once not a people, are now becoming known as a nation. They're finally about to become a nation. They're becoming a nation that is known as the people of God. That's going to be a representation to all of the world of what an awesome, legit relationship with Christ, or sorry, with God looks like, okay? That's where this is beginning in Acts chapter, or sorry, in Joshua 7. A parallel to that is over in the New Testament, where the church is beginning. And the church is beginning in Acts chapter 5. And there's a situation that happens just like in Joshua chapter 7, where when you read it, it's one of those passages you read and you kind of like have this little mental note, say, you know, I don't think God was right there. I need to ask him about this when I see him. I mean, I'm not the one who wants to call him out on something, but I just kind of feel like he was a little harsh here, and a little grace or compassion would be good. And there's just something that seems kind of a little messed up. Because over here in the book of Joshua, you've got all kinds of people who are doing all kinds of things against the people of God, okay? And God doesn't seem to do anything about it. Then this one guy, Achan, takes some stuff that doesn't belong to him, and he buries it in this tent, and God calls him out for the hypocrite that he is and strikes him dead, and his whole family who was in on it. And you're thinking, wow, that's pretty harsh. Fast forward over to Acts chapter 5. The church is beginning and going along, and there's this guy, Ananias, and his wife, Sapphira, and they're Christians. Now, and you read the text, I mean, these people are believers. The thing is, though, is there's another guy who sold some land and gave it to the church to launch a campus over in town center or something like that. I don't know what it was. But so he did that, and everybody's like, wow, way to go, man, that's awesome. And so this other guy's like, well, I've got some land I can sell. And somewhere in the process, he's like, you know, I really want to give it all, but I need to save some of this back. Nothing wrong with that. The problem, though, is he goes and he says, I'm giving it all. And that's where the deception comes. That's where the hypocrisy came in. And when he does that, Peter calls him out, and he goes, are you sure this was all of it? I mean, I don't care if it's not. If it's not, just say it's not. I mean, if it is, then just say it is. But just don't lie about this. And the guy bold-faced lies, and he's like, no, this is the whole thing. Hypocrite. And God strikes the guy dead. And then his wife walks in, not knowing what just happened. And she's like, hey, did my hubby give you the money? And he's like, yeah, I just have one question, though. Did you give it all, or did you pull some back? Basically trying to give her a chance to be authentic and come clean. And she's like, no, we gave it all. And bam, God kills her dead. And you read this and you're like, really? I mean, the guy still made an amazing gift. And that's the guy you kill. And if you're reading the book of Acts, it's kind of crazy, because you got this guy who's a high priest who sentences Jesus to death. And then he's going out persecuting James and John, putting them in jail. Okay. And you're like, or Peter and John, putting them in jail for healing a guy, and God doesn't do anything to that guy. Really? I mean, you're going to kill this guy who's a believer, who sold some land, who just told a lie about it, but this guy who put your son to death and then is persecuting Christians, you let him go off free? And then you read a little bit further in the book of Acts, and you got Stephen who stands up as a bold witness for Christ, and everybody in the Sanhedrin, all these Jewish leaders, are hurling insults at him, and you let all them go free? And then you got this guy, Saul, who later becomes Paul and writes a bunch of the stuff in the New Testament, but back then he wasn't a really good guy. He's there like holding people's jackets so they can wind up and get better throwing angles at Stephen, and God lets him off scot-free. But the guy that gets called out is the believer who sells land and lies about it. At what point do you go, what gives? It just seems like me, God, if you're going to take somebody out, take out the priest over here who crucified your son and who's causing havoc in the church. I mean, you know, give this guy a little slap on the wrist or give him some corrective guidance, but taking him out? What you see in the book of Acts and what you see over in the book of Joshua is this spiritual truth we have a hard time grasping. The church will not be destroyed from forces without. It will not be destroyed by Supreme Court decisions. It will not be destroyed by whoever becomes president or doesn't become president, or whoever gets elected or doesn't get elected, or whatever laws we pass as a nation, or whatever kind of anti-Christian sentiment is out there. None of that will ever take down the church. Jesus says that the gates of hell won't prevail against it. But the thing that will take down the church is hypocrisy within it. You, in other words, you and I are the only ones who can take this thing down. You realize that? Anything our government does, anything our city does, anything anybody from the outside says about us as a church, we'll never take this place down. But if we live lives of hypocrisy, we will take this thing down. And so many people I know have been through those war stories of churches where it wasn't all as it seemed and there was hypocrisy running throughout, and those churches are destroyed and are decimated and there's nothing left of them. And you see, the world can't take this thing down. But we can. So why does God take this guy out? Because this guy was the real threat to what God was doing. Which makes me realize this authenticity thing is a big deal. No wonder Jesus talked about it so much. No wonder he was so bold and blunt about it. No wonder he didn't care if he offended somebody when he talked about it. Because it was that big of an issue. No wonder God was willing to take out this believer so the whole movement didn't suffer. You say, well, why is it that God hates this hypocrisy so much? Why is it that authenticity is so important? Well, there's two main thrusts of this, and he gets into it here in Matthew 23. He tells a whole bunch of stuff about hypocrisy. I encourage you to go read it. I'm just going to pull out two pieces out of this, which gets to the heart of why God hates it so much. In Matthew 23, verses 13 to 15, he says, "Woe to you, teachers of law and Pharisees, you hypocrites." And he tells about why they're being hypocrites or how they're being hypocrites. He says, "You shut the door in the face of people. And keep them from entering heaven. And you yourselves don't even enter it. And you're not even going to let anybody else enter it who's trying to." And what he's getting at there is he's saying, listen, there's people who are desperately crying out, who desperately need the gospel. The gospel is the simple message that no matter what you've done, no matter what you've become, God loves you. Where sin increases, grace increases all the more. It's not just good grace. It's not just how do I buy this grace? It is amazing grace. That is the gospel message. That the gospel simply means good news. And there is good news that no matter what you've done, no matter what you become, God loves you. But what they're teaching people is this idea that you have to be good before God will love you. You have to not just be good, but you have to be perfect before God will love you. You have to be as electable as the President of the United States, but in order for God to love you. It's kind of the image that they put out there. And so what happens when somebody who's got issues, got flaws, got problems, comes to you and says, "I desperately need Christ because I'm a messed up person." They slam the door in the face and say, "Well, come back once you fix yourself up." And so he says, you slam the door in the faces of those who are desperately seeking the kingdom of God, and you make it so that they can't enter. Why does God hate hypocrisy? Because hypocrisy pushes us to live the kind of life that makes people think they got to be perfect in order for them to come to church. Hypocrisy denies the strength and power of the gospel that says it doesn't matter who you are and what you've done, God loves you. You don't have to clean yourself up before you come to church. Come to church all messed up. Every one of us in this room has got issues and problems and jacked up. We're a Jerry Springer show we just haven't talked about yet. And here's the thing. I know a lot of y'all's stories. And it breaks my heart when somebody comes to church or won't come to church or came to church for a while and isn't coming anymore, or I've talked and invited and they just say, I'm not ready to yet, and they share with me their story. The problem is I know there's 10 other stories in our church going through the exact same thing, and I just can't explain it because it was all counseling confidentials. And I just wish someday I could just go, oh, yeah, well, if you don't want to come because of that, let me just tell you the story of blank, 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 blank. And by the way, there have been several of y'all who've come to me and said, hey, if you ever need to use my story, use it. And by the way, I do. I don't publicize. I'm never going to call you out from stage. And you don't know the number of times I've used your story and your testimony and your life and your background and say, listen, you can do this because there's somebody else who's going through this in their marriage and they're going through it too. And it's okay to come to church. You know how many other people we have going to this church who've also been in prison? It's okay what your record is. It doesn't matter. Do you know how many people who are also struggling with addiction who come to church? Heck, we've got a whole corner of them in our church. You can just go sit over with them and hang out and feel comfortable. It doesn't matter what you smell like when you come to church because there's people who don't smell good either. I can tell you where they sit. Just saying, whatever the issue is, I can help you out with this because you're amongst friends here. And hypocrisy denies the power and the heart of the gospel. And on a deeper level, I talk every week about how this life is about nothing more than giving you the opportunity to choose to have a loving relationship with God that you can enjoy for all eternity. When you have hypocrisy at your heart, what you're doing is not allowing somebody to love you for who you are. And we do this with God. We try to put off a better image than we really are because we think we got to do that in order to be accepted by a church. And somewhere along the way, we confuse being accepted by church people with being accepted by God. And unless you're willing to be real with who you are, you cannot be loved. Because what happens is that you know deep down they don't love you, they love the image you're projecting. And if you want God to truly love you, you got to be honest with him about who you are. I tell married couples this all the time. Listen, this is the one relationship opportunity you have where somebody's promised they're going to love you no matter what. Take advantage of it. And pre-marriage counseling, I have people look at each other all the time and say, listen, here's the deal. You got to look at each other before you're going to say your vows that you don't really think about. At least think about this one because this is legit. Just tell the person, I love you, but here's the deal. You got to know going in, I'm a sinner and I'm going to make your life more miserable than anybody else on the face of this earth. Are you sure you want to hook up with me for the rest of your life? Because that's legit. That's true. And if you've been married for any length of time, you know that's true. And yet we sit there and say, I promise to love you for better, for richer, or no matter how much we get in the lottery winnings or whatever. I promise to love you for your good health because I know you're going to keep working out and looking good. And there's all these other contingency plans we just ignore, like, you know, or worse, you know, in sickness or for poorer. Here's the thing. All of that stuff happens. All of it. I mean, guaranteed the hell thing's going to happen, right? Everything's going to happen. And yet somehow we convince ourselves none of that's going to happen. I say, listen, be honest, be real with them because, listen, the beauty of marriage is an opportunity for you to truly be loved for who you are. And if you go down the hypocrisy route, you deny that opportunity. And when you do it before God, you're denying God the opportunity to love you for who you really, really are. What did Adam and Eve do as soon as they sinned? They went to Instagram and they put a filter on and they selfied it and cream canned it with little fig leaves. That's what they did. It was their version of it. They had to cover up. They wanted to cover their shame and they wanted to hide who they really were. And they weren't sure if God would really love them after they had done what they had done. And God says, no, take off that itchy, scratchy stuff. Let me be a covering for you. And so the first death that we believe is recorded in the scripture happens there where God sacrifices a creation, a created being for them, which ultimately would be fulfilled in the created son or the son who is sacrificed for them for all creation. I didn't say that right, but you get the idea. So it's just a picture of Christ's sacrifice for them to cover up our sins. He says, I love you and I will make the sacrifice for you. I will cover you. Don't cover up. I will cover you. So it denies the gospel there. And also it denies our need for change. Matthew 23, verse 25, 26, he says, woe to you, Pharisees, teachers of law, oh, you hypocrites. He says this like phrase over and over, and he calls them hypocrites every time he says something. He says, you clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you're full of greed and indulgence. Psh, how blind. First clean the inside of the cup, then the outside will also be clean. In other words, why polish the outside? It's the inside that's nasty. You want to drink out of a nasty cup? No, but you got this outside that looks amazing. It doesn't matter what the outside looks like. Doesn't the inside matter more? Then he goes on to say, you're like whitewashed tombs that look beautiful on the outside, but inside you're full of stinking, dirty, rotten tombs. And that's all you are. You're like a whitewashed tomb, and inside it's disgusting. So he says, in the same way, on the outside you appear to be righteous, but on the inside you're full of hypocrisy and wickedness. There's a couple sayings we say around here. I don't know if we say them enough so you memorize them or remember them. Is, you know, we want to love people just as they are, but we also want to encourage you not to stay that way either. And the love them just as they are encourages you to be real about who you are. But we also want to love you enough not to leave you there is the second part. See, if you're putting up an image, you're not going to be loved for who you are. If you're putting up an image, you're not going to realize you need to change. The second big reason why God hates hypocrisy is it covers up and masks your need for change. Years ago when I was going through counseling somebody for addictions, one of the things I discovered was a simple principle that the power of addictions and the power of sin in your life is secrecy. The power of sin over your life is secrecy. When you won't tell anybody and you won't get honest about who you really are, sin has a power over you that you cannot overcome because you always will feel this need to put up the image. And so when talking about authenticity, as we were sitting around as a staff, we kind of came up with this phrase, is our hope as a church is that we would be a kind of place where people can come just as they are. And not be afraid to be ourselves or let ourselves be known. And if there's something in us that we want to hide, then that drive to hide it, we need to turn from wanting to hide it to doing something where we confess it, we own it, and use that impetus and power to change it. You see, whenever we have something in us that we want to hide, you need to say, okay, this is not something I want somebody to see. That's the very thing then that you need to confess and work on changing instead of working on better ways to cover it up and hide it. Because that's usually what we do is we work on better ways to cover up and hide. Jesus says, listen, that's going to lead you down a hypocritical path. And I hate when you go down that path because when you go down that path, you're all about washing the outside of the cup and the inside is nasty. And so when you just quit worrying about the facade and what other people look about you, when you just go through a season of life where you don't care what people think about you so you can get yourselves right before him, can you just do that? Because when you do that, you'll find it makes everything else great. When you get the inside of your life right, you don't have to worry about the outside because the outside takes care of itself. And that's what his whole message is. That's what his whole point is. And he wants you to go down that road. And I want to close out with this is last kind of story of how I've struggled with this and where I've dealt with this. And a couple years back, most of you all know my testimony. If you don't, I'll kind of give you a quick overview of it. Back in 2012, my wife of a little over 10 years committed suicide. Now, I'll tell you in the front end, my kids don't know this. So please, if you're ever around them, don't talk about this publicly. Eventually, when they're old enough, I'll explain to them. All they know right now is that mommy took some medicine that she thought would make her feel better, and she had some complications from it, and she passed away, which is technically medically kind of true. But I'll explain to them when they're old enough to really understand it. So please just do me a favor. I'm telling you this just so you'll protect my kids until I can talk with them about it. I remember in the hospital room, question was asked, because she actually passed away on a Sunday. Pastor Bobby was here preaching that Sunday, which if you ever want to hear a great message, go back and listen to that message. He basically said, you know, this is a time where we're either going to run or we're going to rally around this issue. And I didn't know he was talking about that. Meanwhile, I'm over in the hospital, and they're asking me, everybody's going to know how Melissa's doing, and she's passed away. What's the press release got to look like? What are you going to say? What's going to go out there? And this is something that would go out to our church, and I'd wouldn't even think about the fact it'd be picked up by newspapers and it would just kind of get everywhere. And so there's this question of, what do you say is the cause of this? I mean, she died from medical overdose, from drug overdose. So do you want to say it's a medical complication? Because in a sense, really, she should have been able to recover from what she went through. There's a less than 10% chance that she would have a problem with it. Even if that happened, she could have gotten a transplant and gotten out of it. There was like a less than 1% chance she was going to die when she went in, but she died anyway. And so do you come out and say, pastor's wife commits suicide? Or do you politicize it a little bit better? And I just looked and I said, we've always been a church who is authentic about who we are. I don't really see the reason to cover this up. I'm sure there's people who are struggling with this same kind of thing that need to know what she went through, and hopefully it'll get them to be real with it, confess it, and make a different choice. And in the midst of that, somebody came to me and said, you know, I would caution you to do that. If you put this out, do you realize how toxic this makes you look? Do you realize that this may crumble the entire church? I mean, the people may leave in droves because they'll be wondering, what kind of pastor is it that's going to have a wife who makes a decision like this? How messed up was their family life? How much of a fraud was this whole thing? And do you realize how bad this is going to make you look? And I remember just sitting there going, I don't really care at this point. I really don't. You know, if they want to run me out of town, fine. You know, the end of the day, the reality of it is her brother took his own life 6 weeks before. She spiraled down in depression. All of her life, she struggled with whether or not anybody could love her because of an abuse situation in her childhood. And she always had a hard time just being who she was. And after she passed away, I got to talk with her counselor and get a whole lot. I would almost say it'd be a blessing if all y'all could talk to your therapist that your wife's been talking to, your husband's been talking to. You'd find out a load of information that'd be very helpful. And she just said to me, she said, you know, Steve, something Melissa always struggled with was whether or not anybody could ever love her and accept her for who she was. And so she always felt the need to keep up a facade. And perhaps she felt she just couldn't keep it up anymore. And so this is the route she took. And, you know, as a husband, it breaks your heart when you hear that. I kind of wondered that and always thought that, but didn't know it until she said that. And no wonder God hates hypocrisy, because it pushes somebody to think they're only going to be loved if they keep up a facade. And when you realize you can't, what options do you have? I mean, if that's not a perfect opportunity for the enemy to come in and say, just end it, I don't know what is. And so no wonder God hates it. And if he sees it breeding and growing inside of a church, he's going to do everything he can to get rid of it. And my hope for you this morning is if you've got issues, be open about them. I'm not saying get up here and, you know, scream it from the rooftops, but hey, when we talk about getting involved in small groups, why is it that change happens in small groups? because it's an opportunity for you to be authentic and be real and share with some people and be accountable to some people for what you're really going through. That's why change happens there. Change doesn't happen from a sermon, because in a sermon, you can look the part, you can act the part, and walk out and keep on faking it. But in a small group, after you live life with people, eventually you got to come clean and say, we struggle with this. Why does financial peace happen when you go through Financial Peace University? Because week after week, when you're hearing everybody else in the room saying, here's where we're struggling with debt, here's where we have financial problems, eventually, either you or your wife blurts out, here's where our problem is. You're like, honey, we didn't talk about saying this. Well, we got to get it out in the open. And what you find over that 13-week course, you begin to make some changes. That's why over $1 million, I don't know if we're up to $2 or $3 million yet, of personal unsecured debt has been paid off by the church members over the past 5 years we've been doing Financial Peace University. It's because people get authentically real about their finances in that setting. So all that to say this is, Jesus' authenticity is what attracted people to him. Unless we're willing to be that kind of church, the city's going to not care about who we are, what we're doing. They could care less about another church popping up in town. What they need to see is somebody who's literally struggling to live out like Christ, who can say, follow me as I'm doing my best to follow after Christ. Here's where I have issues. Don't follow me on this. Follow me on this. Do you know how refreshing just that is? It's incredibly refreshing. It's what your community needs. Would you join with me as we close?
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.